Today, we're going to continue the conclusions we're making, the concluding episodes of the Nozzle Law reading. Today is actually class 14, and probably we'll have a 15, and probably that'll conclude it next week. Today, Brent is going to present some more of his conclusions of three main areas. And I'm gonna make, small comments on that. And then I'd like to talk about a client of mine who made some observations about the administrative structure in Nosolar as related to the requirements or what seems to be needed for these souls' evolution through third density, apparently, to harvest ability. And then how that relates to 60 wanderers and, that our own sense of that I'm not sure I'm going to that astral city, or I'm not sure I'd want to live in that astral city. And I'd like to talk a little bit about karma yoga, because karma yoga is sort of the formal, is a formal Vedic, Indian Vedas, 3,000-year-old understanding of this particular yoga or path or technique for soul evolution called work. Karma also means work, not just action or cause. So, how that is a systematic understanding of this approach to soul evolution that's being offered to these souls in Nosalar. So we'll start with Brent, and welcome back, Brent, and feel free to make the comments or anything you'd like to say.
Okay. Well, thank you, Scott. I think, yes. I think we'll start today. We've got a few topics that we're going to try and wrap up in these last classes. And a few of the topics, we'll start, actually, I should just say I'm starting the topic with the discussion of inheritance, euthanasia, and the power of thought. And that revolves around, as far as the book is concerned, revolves around pretty much chapter 30, titled Inheritance and Euthanasia. It's on page 182. And let's see, basically, to recap, Andre is working in the chambers, and in this particular instance, he is being introduced to a woman named Pauline, who comes on a regular basis to visit her father, who is a resident and is attempting to recuperate in the chambers. And she's very devoted to him and is trying to get him to heal and to advance in his life, actually, and come out of his loop of hate. And and understand what the power of hate actually has done to him. His situation is that he was a very wealthy individual and provided well for his family. His daughter Pauline preceded him to the other side, to the Astral City, and at when he came, he had like I said, created a pretty good amount of physical wealth provided for his family members as children. And his one of his sons was a doctor. And when he became ill and somewhat elderly, the son decided to hasten his death and injected him with some poison. That was apparently untraceable because he wasn't arrested for murder or anything like that. It was just apparently everyone assumed he just died of old age, and his son, the well-known doctor, was there and pronounced him dead. But however, of course, the father wakes up on the other sides and realizes that his son has killed him. That right there is an interesting perspective too. People realizing, anyone who any individuals out there, murderers, they don't realize that, they will meet their the people that they have created, you know, to who they have murdered on the other side, and have to rectify that situation when they get there, right? Anyway, so basically Pauline has come, and she is very disconcerted because she actually quotes on page 132. She says, you know, that there isn't much change, or she finds out there isn't much change in her father, and she says, well, it's a pity, and always the same hate, the same lack of understanding. And that's the idea. They're trying to get him to understand that it was just the end of the physical, not the end of his existence, and that you have to move on, you know, you have to learn and you have to grow. And then she goes on and she's trying to convince him, of course, you know, to attempt to forgive his son Edelbert, and that by doing so, of course, he can move on, he can heal, the family can heal. And of course, the father is very much wrapped up in anger and hate and frustration, and even physically displays that. Andre is taken aback when he sees him in the chamber when he and Narcissa take Pauline to go visit the father. Taken aback by his appearance, because he is so angry and so vengeful and so so full of hate, and it's the father will just not. The father continues to call him a loathsome criminal, unworthy of pardon. He is the devil's own son, and so of course that brings tears to Pauline's eyes, and is because she is trying to help him heal. And then it gets into a discussion a little bit further on down about how she is trying to explain to her father and have him understand on page 134 that, quote, you are constantly projecting poisonous fluids of bitterness, and that's an incomprehension to them, meaning the rest of the family, and they in turn are doing the same back to you. Thought, as subtle waves, never misses its target. However distant it may be, the exchange of hate and suspicion causes ruin and suffering to the soul. So it's also reciprocal. She's trying to explain to her father that it's a reciprocal thing. He is projecting this anger, hate, frustration, poisonous fluids of bitterness to the son, but it also, because thought travels in waves, it also reflects to the other members of the family. She explains to the father that his wife has been taken to a mental hospital because she is unable to resist the atmosphere, the mental atmosphere at home. The daughters are fighting with the brothers and brought lawsuit because of disagreements about the large fortune that the father had amassed. And it's just terrible. And it's all about imbalance, and the imbalance of anger and suffering as opposed to forgiveness. Whereas if he could learn to forgive and reconcile, those same thought patterns would be projected and sent to the family, and they would also begin to heal too. And the conflict that they would have amongst themselves, it would also help them heal that particular conflict too. Let's see, and I was trying to see here if there was something else that I'd had marked here to quote. Oh, she basically is just talking to him about, well, he had assured his family's future by maintaining and by amassing this fortune. You also have to maintain an atmosphere of moral tranquility in the home by preparing your children to earn an honest living, which he didn't do. He was too busy trying to prepare for their well-being, but not teaching them to prepare themselves to create an honest living for themselves. And also, you know, by example, that the children's learned that money is usually, especially in this particular case, accumulated through pride and ambition. And that's what the children learned. They didn't learn moral tranquility or to earn an honest living. They just learned to accumulate money through ambition and pride, and anxiety and being anxious to live above other people instead of treating other people as their brothers. So that was a very interesting listen, and I wanted to point that back out because I know we passed over it very rapidly as we were going through the reading. And of course, unfortunately, That was the end of the, pretty much the end of the chapter. Unfortunately, she didn't have much luck. The father still was cursing his son Adalbert, and in the end, Pauline ended up just leaving and would return the next day to try again and to help him out. What do you think about any of that, Scott? Any comments on that before we move on?
Sure. The first point is what they've said a few times in various passages, instruction in the Astral City, that thought generates fluidic waves. Thought is substantial to the degree that energy fields as waves in a fluidic motion have non-physical substance. And so that's the basis, actually, of the idea that truly helping yourself is a true world service. There's physical world service in relationship, physical in the sense that my body, your body, we're talking, and that's a kind of mental transfer at best, you know, when there's love light or love wisdom. But in any case, when a person self-purifies, meaning moving out of lower triad blockage, moving into green, blue, indigo, moving to a peaceful heart or a heartful mind or a deep acceptance of self and other and a commitment to kindness and honesty, that affects, inevitably, must affect the environment, because thoughts associated with those changed perspectives radiate as fluidic energy fields and waves to the environment, to the context in which we're living. And we can say that, but that's part of the basis that helping oneself leads is really the required foundation for helping anyone else other than self, depending on how well we move out of harmful patterns, thus we become, you know, a radiatory point of love light, more or less, or increasingly. And attachment to hate, you know, there's a difference between distorted mental process and attachment to distorted mental process. And our problem is really not the arising of distortion or emotional charge or selfishness, greed, and all this. It's the attachments we have to them, to those ways. And that was mentioned here in terms of bending the will of others, or bending others to our will. And it's back to control. And so the basic axis of clarity or wellness versus distortion, or love wisdom versus distortion, is control versus acceptance. And so the more we accept, the less we're controlling, and the more we can understand and be a positive influence and be well. So you can't just get from here to tranquility, but you can certainly get from here to a deep understanding of why I'm not in tranquility, or why I'm not, how I'm not well. And that's a whole lot of what's going on here in No Solar, is to help people see their own patterns. And good psychotherapy or therapy or good friendship, good relationship does that. The importance of honest reflection. And Ra talked about that too in a later session, where simply unconditionally accepting and supporting and agreeing with people is far less helpful than being an honest reflector of how we see, what we see going on, spoken in kindness. Not always saying yes, yes, and supporting people with their own patterns or our own opinions. So there's a whole lot of holding the mirror up to people going on here in the Astral City. And the more we do that here for ourselves, hold the mirror up for ourselves, and see our mind and see our patterns clearly, the more we can offer non-poisonous waves, non-poisonous fluids in the environment, and that's really important. So that's it for now, Brent.
Sure. Well, no, I agree. I was even going to try and add, I was, as you mentioned, there, you know, Raw, of course, has an awful lot to talk about or a lot to mention, cover as far as thought forms and thought process goes. And I was looking for a quote that might assist in this particular section, the Law of One. And, of course, I searched thought forms, but I came up, of course, there was 438 results found. So I couldn't find one that was specifically appropriate, but it just shows you, I guess, briefly how important thought is and how much of a role, of course, it does play in creation, in everything. And people are so unaware of that. They think thoughts are just the average individual just doesn't really believe that thought is that important, and if they only knew how much it is, I think they would probably really radically change their perspective.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Well, anyway, moving on here, because I know we're running out of time. Let's see. Moving on, I want to talk about a little bit on anomalous reincarnation, as you mentioned. You wanted to bring up last week, and that's a very important point of the anomalous, just for those that anomalous is, of course, defined in the dictionary as deviating from what is standard, normal, or expected. So an anomalous reincarnation would be something that deviates from standard or normal or expected reincarnation, right? And in this particular case, it has to do with what's covered in chapter 46, a woman's sacrifice, which is on 205. And that, of course, is where Andre's mother explains that she is going back to Earth to help Laertes, her husband, escape from the lower zones and from the women that have bound him there for so long. And it's getting quite important that he leave fairly soon, because he has become a skeptic with a poisoned heart. And if he remains with that attitude for much longer, she is concerned that he's going to be drawn deeper into the dark abysses. And so Andre's busy, of course, in that chapter trying to talk her out of it, explain, why can't you just stay? Why can't you help him from afar? Do you really have to go? And then, of course, she explains yes, and she has an interesting point. She says, spirits who really love aren't satisfied with blending a helping hand from a distance. And that's true. You want a hand, you want to get in there and be personally involved with that assistance. And she also points out to Andre that if you can't raise the inferior to the superior, the opposite can be done. In other words, she can lower her energy to the inferior to help all the parties involved raise their energy levels to the superior by example, by living it with them, which I think, you know, a lot we can all relate to, because we've done that many times in our own reincarnations. But she talks about how as far as the anomalous reincarnation goes, she goes in, and her explanation is that they were actually they were successful in binding him to his new physical body. And it was an interesting way that they did it, which I can't even begin to, I understand it a little bit, but not completely. And they said, with the help of some friends, she started preparing his immediate reincarnation, and last week settled him on Earth. He was never aware of any direct help from them, because we availed ourselves of a time when he was trying to escape the women who still subjugated him. This mental attitude was very helpful, and they succeeded in binding him to his new physical body. So I thought that was interesting. Somehow they used or availed themselves of a certain time or a memory, a thought process that he had at a time when he was still trying to escape the women before, before he became a skeptic, excuse me. And were successful in binding him, which is interesting. Then, of course, at that point, Andre gets very upset and said, "What about our individual liberty? I mean, how can we be bound by these things?" And it's almost like, "Can't we? Aren't his attitude is basically, aren't we allowed to do whatever we want?" You know, and I said, "No, that's not how it works." So, and she explains, the soul can't claim unlimited freedom unless it fully understands its duty and performs it. The debtor is a slave to his debts. God created free will, man created fatality. We have to break the chains we ourselves have forged, which makes sense. You know, you are bound by your karma, basically, which is, you know, we've also talked about that too. And so basically, yes, you do have a certain amount of free will, but if you create a problem, if you make a mess of your life and other people's lives and create conflict and pain, you have to go back and make it right. Nobody else is going to do it for you. You are responsible. And that's another thing that the average individual could stand to learn here on this planet. The lack of responsibility for one's actions is kind of rampant, but that's a whole nother subject. Anyway, she goes on to talk about, you know, Andre asks about the poor girls. What about the poor girls who've been persecuting him for so long? And then she says, well, the poor girls who persecuted him won't give up their intent. So they were not going to just let him go. So she says, if it were not for our spirit guards, he might have been deprived of this opportunity for reincarnation. So therefore, the spirit guards apparently went with her and helped release him of their astral binding to him so that he could be reincarnated. However, it wasn't a complete release, because she also explains that they will be reincarnated too. So apparently all three of them, the two girls and her husband, will be reincarnated as a group, because they are going to become her daughters in the life, and she is going to not only help him, but go and hopefully help them all. So while she is actually going to help the father, she says, love is indispensable. And with any luck, she will come back to the astral city, bringing along other sacred affections for a great festival of joy, love, and union, she says. So I thought it was quite interesting. Anyway, what do you think about those particular points, Scott? I'm sure that there was a few things that you wanted to add to that particular topic.
Yeah. There are a few important principles involved here. First is the danger of poisonous skepticism. He became a skeptic with a poisoned heart, page 206. And so there's skepticism with and without poisoned heart. The poison is associated with hateful thought form, or patterns of hate and aggression or hostility, violence in mind, that would obviously lead to violence in thought and possibly deed, or physical violence. So skepticism that leads to bitterness, that leads to hate and aggression, very, very similar to Howard Storm, leads souls to get lower and lower, to deserve a lower and lower rebirth in the hell realms, actually. And it's that unfortunately is the danger, you know, or is a real danger in persistence in skepticism. And there's a difference between agnosticism and atheism. The skeptic is sort of the confirmed atheist or the confirmed materialist who believes that he or she has some certainty that there is no afterlife, there is no God, there is no moral law, there are no consequences of moral behavior, and in fact there's no morality. You just do whatever the hell you want, whatever happens, happens. And that's that. And that, unfortunately, is the New World Order credo, which is freedom, the folly, the mistaken belief of freedom without consequence, and personal freedom existing in a moral vacuum, meaning there is no superstructure of plan for incarnation or plan for creation. It's just some random thing that happened together, and that's the end of that. If a person believes that, that itself is not necessarily deeply problematic. There are ethical humanists who are atheists or agnostics, but they also believe in taking care of each other or helping humanity. But when hate and aggression and violence goes into the mind and ones get attached to that, then that's the recipe for further binding. Now, we also see on page 206 what could be called the pure spirit of service, the pure attitude of service. She says, "Would you be content to live in a palace from which your children were excluded? What good are all the riches in the world if we can't share them with our loved one?" And so from higher dimensions, from well-purified mind, one lives in love. One feels love really tangibly and feels living in a palace too. Yes, indeed. And Sixth Density Wanderers were very much experiencing universal love in palatial, paradisical, Edenic conditions, really beyond even a physical paradise in Sixth Density. And that's where some of us are from. There's absolutely no proof of that, and that confers no spiritual or no existential superiority, but that's possibly the truth, so one might want to consider that. And so from that view of tangible, 24/7, continual tangible feeling, great love, feeling like all of creation is brother, sister, family, or children, or loved ones, living in a blissful condition, actually. Are you content to live there and remain there, from which all these other souls in creation are excluded? By their own deeds, of course, not by, fickle God. They exclude themselves. Well, feeling that just doesn't seem right, I don't want to be I don't want to be selfish, but I also don't really like, I can't live joyously in my love palace with loved ones in the light while there's all this pain in the world. So the brothers and sisters of sorrow, the term for wanderers from Ra. The sorrow of humanity and Jesus, Yeshua, as the man of sorrows, feeling the sorrow of humanity. And so that, I think, is the pure spirit or attitude of service that is common to all the wanderers before they come in. And she's showing her understanding of that here to her son. Meanwhile, when she becomes their mother of the women who are obsessing the husband who was binding himself further, don't be surprised if she has a short temper sometimes and gets quite out of love with two daughters who may be hateful of their mother from day one. And that happens, That happens, loving soul chooses to be the mother of hateful children who, in fact, hate their mother from day one. It happens. I'm familiar with it. Not me, but I've seen it. And that happens, and so... don't idealize how she'll be down here on the ground under the veil. I imagine she'll have a hard time moving back to love too, with daughters who may persist in their hate of her, or hate of the father, the one they're trying to bind. Now, in terms of this anomalous reincarnation, this little phrase, with the help of some friends, probably indicates higher dimensional beings who are familiar with form maker body readjustment in real time, where the mental patterns associated with his desire to run away, escape the women who still subjugated him, the free will based change in mind, body, spirit, seven dimensional energy fields associated with the strength of his desire to escape from them, set up the conditions electromagnetically in the seven dimensional system of this man, the father, whereby, without infringement, they could use his strength of desire to free himself to bind him to a fetus. That would be him reincarnating. I think something like that. Binding him to his new physical body means a fetus. So binding a lower zone tormented soul who strongly wants freedom, bound to the fetus by the assistance of higher dimensional, you know, who were they? Maybe the grasshopper, my friends, the grasshopper group. So there are 5D positive entities, and they're around 5D wanderers who are of that group. They're usually tall and angular and bony or well-chiseled bone structure. And they're very positive, but they're very wisdom over love, and usually often in science. And so she got some special help there. And they don't talk about that much because, again, it's too far away from the main learning that the souls in Astral City or Dr. Louise needed at the time. And so, down that page, there are some reincarnations carried out rather drastically if the patient lacks the courage to accept the sacred but bitter medicine. So there's a lot of flowery language here. Yes, the bitter medicine is remorse, regret, and metanoia, or a reversal in mind from attachment to hate to appreciation of love and non-control and regret and repentance and a real desire to not hurt self and other. That's a bitter medicine, what he did and how he'd need to change to pull himself and to accept higher dimensional help, to realize that he screwed himself up and hating the haters don't work. And yet he couldn't do that. And so that's, I think, you know, why they intervened, or one of the reasons, because he couldn't do it himself. He couldn't pull himself out of the lower zones. And that's, again, attachment to fighting the evildoers. And we, you know, easily could get attached to that. And finally, a very, very subtle point, which is the understanding of spirit, the equation of spiritual freedom with the fulfillment of duty and the repayment of debt. Very subtle point. The soul can't claim unlimited freedom unless it fully understands its duty and performs it. The debtor is a slave to his debts. Yeah, what are debts? Debts are basically associated with the intention by which we seek to control and dominate others. When we seek to control and dominate others, the service to self path, what are we doing? We're taking. We're taking. And so when we're taking, we become a debtor to the one we've taken from. And so chains forged by ourself that limit freedom are associated with rejection of duty and the incurrence of debt. Incurring a debt, metaphysical debt. And I think that debt is incurred by taking advantage and using people for our own desires, whether it's shut up and listen to me, or lie down and do what I say, or I'm going to take advantage of them in the business deal so I can bankrupt their company and take it over and I'll be a big, big shot and make more money, or any kind of fraud, any kind of physical violence, any kind of sexual exploitation, any kind of mental overriding or mental abusing is a debt incurring activity. It incurs metaphysical debt. And bad karma is the return of, you know, is a means by which metaphysical debt is repaid by leading to the qualification for greater freedom. And so the unlimited freedom that comes from fully understanding duty and performing it is a deep understanding of cosmic plan. And living one's life in accord with cosmic plan whereby life becomes the opportunity for soul evolution in accord with cosmic plan, right? Universal vision, soul evolution, cosmic plan. What you do in the context of what the Logos offers. The Logos offers cosmic plan. What we do is soul evolution, seeking freedom. How? Well, by understanding our duty and performing it. What duty is that? Well, it's the duty to continue on our path. What path? Well, what's the nature of the path? Well, it's the path of love and unity. Okay, well, that's clearly all well defined by Ra. Clearance of the lower triad and activation and balance of green, blue, indigo. You know, a heartful mind and a mindful heart. A kindly mind and a clear heart. That understands duty and performs it. But it doesn't have to be a heavy-handed understanding of duty. It's really, you know, our duty to others is our expression of our duty to ourself. And it's totally normal. I mean, it's very difficult. It's very easy to take care of sweet people. It's very difficult to be in love wisdom with bad people. Bad people means people who've committed themselves to bad, meaning people who want to control, manipulate, angry, unreasonable, dogmatic, irrational, controlling, manipulative, etc. It's very difficult to be in love wisdom, and one cannot be in idiot compassion. One has to be above love over wisdom or compassion that is duped and naive and unreasonable or unjust. So the love of justice as the love of truth coming out into communication with kindness but clarity that may be firmness that the other may not want to hear. This is associated with performing our duty or paying our debt, performing our duty particularly in terms of how we treat others, how we'd like them and others to treat us. So performing our duty incurs no debt. Not performing our duty incurs debt. The debt is very much metaphysical robbery. You know, to the extent that we try to manipulate anybody, anytime, for anything, there is a kind of theft involved. And so understanding duty is understanding cosmic plan, understanding the path of soul evolution, performing it, not incurring debt, and then one deserves greater freedom. And freedom is earned. And metaphysical, you know, deep incarnational existential freedom, the freedom to go in and out of bodies, our own body, or, you know, forms and incarnations and dimensions, free to come and go, as Lin Chi said, you know, put on your clothes, take them off, and that freedom, yes, very much is associated with a full repayment of debt and a great commitment to duty, honor, responsibility, Ra talked about, as a, you know, threefold unity. So it's an honor, and it confers duty and responsibility to be helped, or even to know cosmic plan, to he who has much is expected, to he who has much shall be given. So to one who has much or one who does much, one who seeks to understand our duty or the path and cosmic plan and perform it, not incur debt and be willing to pay off our debt, right? Like certain troublesome people in our lives, however we indeed are still tied to troublesome people, it can be understood as a kind of karmic debt repayment for sure. That is a form of duty that leads to greater freedom. So one who has given oneself much, much shall be further given and much is expected. And that one experiences much freedom. You see it, I see it, with all any great teacher. They're not abusing their freedom, but they have great freedom, but they are very well disciplined according to duty, you know, according to conformity with the plan. So these are some very important reflections, I think, that came from this chapter 46. So, Brent?
Yes, I definitely agree. And I think it's also interesting, just briefly, to point out that The girls involved, I mean, while the intent was to go and save Andre's mother's husband there, the girls would not give up their connection or their persecution to him. And I think because they wouldn't give up, I mean, maybe I'm wrong in this observation, but because they would not give up their link to him, because of that, they were reincarnated too. In other words, if they would have given up the link to him, the persecution of him, they wouldn't have gone, or they wouldn't have had to go anywhere. But because he was being forcibly reincarnated, or anomalously reincarnated, I'll say, they went with him. It was almost like because of their attitude and persecution, they were made to go with him also. Do you think?
Well, yes, there are all sorts of metaphysical principles in that also. In a certain sense, you cannot do healing but at the scene of the crime. One must address, you know, the punishment must fit the crime at the scene of the crime for there to be resolution. The crime is the nature of the relationship between the two women and the man, the father in the lower zone. Meaning, they're against him, he's against them. They hate him, he hates them, or they've made enemies out of each other and are locked in a kind of power struggle. That is best resolved by putting the three of them back together again with positive influence, with the mother and some other positive influences. Mm-hmm. And the aggressor is bound to the object of aggression. And hate binds the hater. Distortion binds the distorted. Attachment to distortion binds the being to those distortions. So attachment is attachment. Attachment to a mental process that is distorted leads to binding to the other souls or any other souls involved in that distorted process, including other beings. So I'm bound to the one I hate. I'm also bound to the one I feel I cannot live without. And so there's control associated with desire, and there's control, or there's the desire to embrace, or so-called love, right? Love as control, manipulatory love, controlling love, affection, and then there's controlling hate. So hate is a desire. It, to some degree, hate is a form of control in the same way as affection, over-affection, sentimentality, you know, over-affection, over-attachment to family or loved ones is similarly controlling. And so the great freedom is really detachment, not hate, love or hate, when love, you know, is understood as sort of controlling affection, affectionate controlling. You're mine, you know, I want to find a man who's mine. You're mine, babe. And this possessiveness, right, controlling, binds the controller to the object in just the same way as hate. And so there was a very common understanding in early Buddhism, and even today from some people, but you won't hear it commonly in the West, that if you have too much lust for a woman, you will be reborn as a woman. And that's possible. And so if you're so fascinated with women's bodies and women's this and that as a guy, you may be reborn as a female body because you love it so much. And the Buddhist monks are like, aghast, you know. So that was seen as a real problem. So, but it is true that some souls are reborn as women because they're overly attached to female form. So what where there is a controlling affection or affection that seeks to control and possess, and where there is hate and animosity in that seeks to punish or seeks to keep and hold the object of punishment, in both cases there's metaphysical binding. So, better to resolve it nearby the scene of the crime and put those souls together and see what they can do. But you can also say it's a recipe for disaster because you better have, some other influence, positive influences there, or very careful higher self programming to make sure that they don't just fall into the same lower zone hole in mind during the incarnation and then reincarnate back to the lower zones with the still, or with the animosity remaining.
Exactly. Thank you very much. And that's an excellent point. And it's in a sense, well, to some folks, it would be a subtle point, but to others, others of us, not so subtle. But it was important to bring up, nonetheless, I think. And anyway, moving along here, the last point I wanted to bring up actually takes us to chapter 49, Returning Home, towards the end of the book on page 220. Actually, 221, Andre has already returned home and discovered that his wife is remarried. So he goes through the shock of all the changes. His wife is remarried, his son is off creating mischief and running amok, and older daughter is married and had a child, and they are not allowed to even mention his name in the house or any of his thing. All of his things have been sold. Any reminders of the new husband to the old husband have been removed. And so he goes through some conflict, but then of course he finds that the new husband is a middle-aged man laying in bed and suffering from pneumonia, and they aren't even sure if he's going to survive. Interestingly, as he rushes in there, Andre says, "I ran into my room only to find the spacious chamber completely changed. On the bed lay a middle-aged man, clearly in poor state of health. Three dark entities walked to and fro beside him, doing their utmost to aggravate his sufferings." And I'll just mention that when I read that, I was a bit taken aback several years ago as I was meditating on a loved one's condition who was suffering from cancer at the time. I was aware in my meditation of him being surrounded by two, well, not surrounded, but accompanied by two dark entities. Now, at the time, I wasn't aware that they were negative entities. They were there, and then in my ignorance, I wasn't sure whether or not they were there to assist him or to watch him, or somebody was just visiting. I didn't know what their purpose was. I just observed it. And then, of course, after reading this, realized that they were probably dark entities aggravating his suffering at the time. So that if I'd have known that at the time, I probably would have had a different approach to my attitude and what I might have done. I might have done what I could to protect him. But anyway, I just want to bring that up as an interesting correlation to my own personal experience. And then, of course, after that, he realized that he had to do something, that we were all brothers and sisters, and that he learned a lot being in the Astral City for a year. He meditated on that. Clarence showed up and attempted to comfort him and realized that there was a great spiritual opportunity for education and learning here for him. And he realized that, yes, it was, she was happy. If the situation was reversed, his wife Zelia, if she had passed away first, he would probably do the same thing. He might seek out a second spouse or a second partner in life, and especially a woman at that time, keeping in mind the books were written in 1930. At the time, women were very much reliant on the male they were the keepers of the home, and the men were the ones that were out in the working world raising money, and God knows what would have happened to her and his family had she not remarried. So he comes to all these realizations. And then on the healing aspect, he understands that going on to the next chapter, actually the last chapter of the book on 225, 226, specifically, he goes and he actually, first thing he tries to do is to help. And he goes and he tries to, let me find this here. He began to try and enlighten the ignorant entities who kept a close link with the patient. But he says, my difficulties were enormous and I felt exhausted because he on his own was trying to sway the negative entities from what their purpose was. And of course, he failed at that because they were dedicated to what they were trying to do. And then he called Narcissa. He realized that he could call Narcissa for help and that she could travel by volitation directly to him, and she showed up. And it was interesting. She arrived, saw the situation. She immediately began applying strengthening passes to the patient and raising a barrier between him and the dark entities who disappeared as if by magic, which, of course, any of us know that I have done that myself, you know, practiced protection by barrier and surrounded protection of the white light and to deflect negative entities. And that's exactly what she did and is verified here in the book, which I thought was another nice verification, my own practices. And then she realized that he needed some fluids. He said, man is not the only one to receive and emit fluids. Nature does the same. In our patient's case, we need the trees. So they went out to the yard, and she called out to someone with words that she could not understand. In a few moments, eight spirit entities responded. And to his great surprise, Narcissa asked them whether there were mango and eucalyptus trees in the neighborhood. And she required the information from her friends. And she explained, oh, these are just brothers. They're ordinary workers in the vegetable kingdom. And they explained where I had to go to get what I needed. So, of course, they did. And they went to find the eucalyptus and mango. So she not only applied spiritual passes to his physical body, which I was unaware and I thought was an interesting point in the book, but then she went and applied through ordinary breathing and the absorption through his skin the essences that she concocted from eucalyptus and mango. And applied to the patient, and then when the doctor showed up the next day, there was a miraculous change in his situation and his health. So here is an example of an astral healer actually helping an entity in a physical body through not only physical passes and spiritual passes, but also, or magnetic passes, but also the application of these substances through and help with healing, which I thought was pretty amazing. That's pretty much it. Then, of course, he goes and he tries volition. He goes back and forth, and the man is healed. The family is reunited. The lovers are reunited. He realizes that the man and his ex-wife and the family are all brothers and sisters trying to work together to grow. And he then, in the next few pages, becomes a citizen of the Astral City. But anyway, those aspects of healing, the banishment of the negative entities, and the healing part was very interesting, I thought. What do you think, Scott?
Oh, yeah, very interesting. And the brothers working in the plant kingdom may have been angelics. They may have been ensouled 3D beings or higher dimensional beings simply working with the plant evolution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some people who seem to idealize magical medicine or spiritual healing. Spiritual healing for the body only is needed for souls at the level where they're still harming their body. In higher dimensions, there's no need for any kind of intensive, I mean, higher dimensions meaning four, five, six, beings are moving beyond the distortions in mind that lead to physical illness. And one can refer, or I refer back, or think about Yeshua and early teachings where the goal was freedom from death. And there's Buddhist understanding of freedom from death and the deathless, which is nirvana, which is really outside the octave, it seems. While there's harvestability to fourth density positive, which is also a freedom from death and a freedom from illness. And Ra had said, in fourth density, there is no illness. And so plant medicine, calling the devas to do, magical medicine is wonderful, but it's not necessary in fourth dimension and up, in general. Except as pertains third density souls, excuse me, that are so distorted in mind that they're still harming their body. And that the distortions in mind filter down to body pathology. So, calling the devas to help with energy healing is great, and it's really wonderful. It's magical, yes. And the body level of distortion will be finished when beings are in fourth density and up. That's just sort of important, I think, to bear in mind.
Definitely, yes, indeed.
But other than that, I don't have so much to say. Also, we're getting close to the hour, and it may not be possible this time to talk about karma yoga or the comments from the client, my friend, who is talking about the administrative, the evolutionary purpose, or the discussion of the evolutionary purpose associated with the administrative structuring of life in the astral city, as it pertains to a particular level of evolution moving to harvestability out of third density. I don't know if we really can talk about that much today because we're really hitting the hour soon. And maybe it's better we clear this material and rather than start a whole new discussion for next time, which we will, and I'd like to hear your comments on it too. So what do you think about that? That next time we'll look into her comments and a discussion of karma yoga from the Vedic tradition, the Hindu tradition,
Okay.
and answer some other questions that some people may have about the whole process. There really is a lot to say about Nosalar, and so even next week, 15, class 15 is not going to be enough. But
Sure,
that's
that sounds fine to me. I'm fine. And I think that yeah, we can just cover those topics next week that you had in mind, and also the discussion topics from questions from other participants, definitely, to continue on and either wrap up or even continue on beyond that if we need to, if there's more questions that have to be addressed. But yeah,
Right.
that sounds fine with me.
Right. Okay. So let's just plan to next week pick up the ending of the conclusions associated with the purpose for which Astral City is so highly structured, and how wanderers may understand that in relation to our own feelings in reading it, or preferences, or our notion of freedom, or a freedom that we may be accustomed to. But I just think that, going back to the previous comment, that freedom is earned, even in a creation in which the first distortion is the law of free will. The law of free will is a distortion. That's the point. That's why there is duty. Because the law of free will is a distortion. Meaning, there's something wrong in there's some problem. There's a distortion. There's a imperfection. There's a flaw in the matrix, in creation. Made by the perfection, the infinite beatitude of the one infinite love light creator, creation represents the appearance, even though it's illusory, the very apparently tangible, apparently substantial appearance of a flaw in Godhead. And its nature is Godhead, but the experience of beings in it is distortion under the law of free will, whereby free will is not unlimited and is for the purpose of moving out of the distortion, meaning moving back to Godhead, moving back to the Absolute, which is the Logos, which is prior to time and space, prior to light, consciousness, energy, time and space, the source. And although free will is the name of the game, it exists within the parameters of a system that represents an apparent flaw in infinity. Experientially flawed infinity. Creation is experientially flawed infinity. It's an apparent Mar, not Bruno Mar, but and not Mars Family Mar or Candy Bar, but an apparent Mar or flaw or distortion of infinity, even though its nature is the one infinite creator, yes. And so, while free will is the basis of creation, the law is the first law, the law of free will. It's the reason that that love interpenetrated and led to light, or light, whose nature is love, was let there be. It was let there be. It was let be'd, or allowed to be, or created out of that infinite will of the one infinite, so that beingness, experiencing apparent non-infinity, right, the concept of finity, the illusion of limits, Ross said, with free will that is limited by its own level of development, can, by effort, return to its source. And so freedom is limited at every stage of evolution, and moving through the stages of evolution, which are progressive and sequential, just like the chakras 1 through 7, just like the frequency of light increases from red to violet, that increase in frequency, movement up the ladder, Jacob's ladder, back to source, or the pure white light, or the source of visible light, intelligent energy, and the Logos, allows increasing, confers increasing freedom. So the freedom of higher self is far greater than the freedom of third density under the veil being, or beingness in third density. We are not a being, we are beingness. Then what is the self, right? Self is one, the one infinite creator, that's the love one, right? So then we're not talking about beings, we're talking about beingness. Apparently separate beingness. Experiencing whatever degree of free willing it has at its own level of development, with dukkha and distress and stress at each level that is increasingly reduced or stripped off, or decreased dukkha, increased freedom. But that freedom is earned by evolution. And so, you know, do as thou wilt is the whole of the law. Totally wrong. Totally wrong. Totally long. Long and wrong. The whole of the law is return to your source. And freedom confers duty. Freedom is the result of fulfillment of duty. That's why it isn't 360-degree absolute freedom. Not at all. And the more we fulfill duty, which includes repayment of debt, although one can say there's karmic debt, and then there's just the debt of being at a particular level of the octave. You know, being in one dimension, third dimension, or fourth, or fifth, or sixth. is not the end of the game, and there's freedom but limited freedom, and there's a work to do, which is the work that allows one to expand to the next level or expand further, and thereby find greater freedom. But the fulfillment of true spiritual duty, which really means, you know, live your path and, you know, guide mind and life in accord with understanding of path, that confers greater freedom. And whenever we fall into distortion, not just experience distortion, but fall into it by attachment, that's the difference. There's a difference between the arising of emotional charge and attachment to emotional charge. But when we fall into unhelpful patterns, harmful ways, wrong speech, wrong action, you know, wrong livelihood, and so on, wrong meditation, wrong view, all of it too. When we fall into that and get attached to the ways of harming self and other, we incur a debt. That debt has to be paid back somehow. It's just the metaphysics of intelligent energy. And that's some of the background philosophy, I think, that isn't fully explained in this book, but undergirds the instruction given to Dr. Louise and souls at this level. And in some ways, we're at this level too, of course. So we may be from a greater freedom, but we are subject to the same distortions and debt incurrence as they, for sure. And that really happens when we get stuck in, you know, loveless mind, patterns of mind and behavior and speech that are without adequate love light, love wisdom. So, Brent, some final comments before we wrap up for class 14?
Sure. It's been a great pleasure doing this, and I thank you, Ashley, for hosting the entire process on your channel, because it was important information, as I know you agree, and I hope that others out there learn some important points as much as we did. Not all things, but gleaned a few things out of it, at least as we went along.
You know, if they learn as much as us, we'll be out of a job.
That's true.
So just take it slow, folks. Take it slow. Don't worry. You'll catch up. Don't worry. Give me a head start. All right.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we'd be
anyway.
Unemployed.
That's it, pretty much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I appreciate anyone out there who was paying attention, followed us through, and listened. And I appreciate you all being here very much.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brent. I appreciate it. Also, I'm glad to ride horse by horse with you down this portion of the path. So,
right, shotgun, right?
Well, shotgun is two on a horse, right?
No, it's two on a. It's actually two on a wagon. It's like a stagecoach. They used to ride shotgun on stagecoach. There's a little bit of trivia for everybody out there. Yeah, there was the driver and the guy that rode shotgun to protect the cargo and the passengers.
So, who's on the shotgun? You or me?
Well, I don't know. We shared it. How about that? We traded off.
Yeah. Well, I could see it. Or as two horsemen to riding in the plains,
the great
plains. So, the valley of the Garden of Samsara. So, all right. So, thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week with episode 15, and. Great stuff. Take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.